Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello there, welcome along to the latest Full Throttle podcast from Eurosport. This is Monday, the 7th of June, 2021, and we've got not one, but two World Superbike riders on the show this week. Greg Haynes with you, and as I say, two World Superbike riders this week. Alex Lowes discussing the start of his season with Kawasaki, and Eugene Laverty, who's had a surprisingly good start to the year with the RC Squadra Corsa customer team BMW. And we will also have the first instalment and a new feature for the Full Throttle podcast, Magic Moments. And this week it'll be a Murray Walker memory from a former colleague of his and great friend, Barry Nutley. But we kick things off, first of all, ahead of Misano World Superbikes this weekend with Kawasaki's Alex Lowes following the opening two rounds of the season at Aragon and Estoril, and a word or two on that controversial situation we saw in Superpole last time out. So Alex, I'd say congratulations first, because it's been a great start to the season, hasn't it? Really strong qualifying. We'll talk in a second about what happened at Estoril, but three podiums from three at Aragon, and it could well have been more at Estoril. How are you feeling with the season so far?
Yeah, really happy with the season. Aragon was a great weekend. Even though we had some mixed weather, I was still able to be fast in all the conditions, which is great. And Estoril was a track that was really poor at last year, and this year through the through the practice and qualifying sessions, I was quite fast. Obviously, we had the penalty in the qualifying, which put me on the fourth row, and it made the races a little bit more difficult. But actual speed was good, and it's been a nice strong start to the year, which is what I was hoping for after a good winter's testing on the Kawasaki.
Let's talk about Estoril first, actually, because that's the hot topic still, isn't it, really? Lots of penalties given out for jump starts, but let's go to qualifying. Just talk us through what happened there from your point of view.
Yeah, obviously we have the yellow flag in MotoGP, the same as World Superbike. If you're on a fast lap and there's a yellow flag, your lap's cancelled, which is okay and understandable in the practice sessions. Obviously, if there's somebody crashing the gravel and the marshals are retrieving the bike, or they're not out of the way, then it's completely normal and they have to respect the flag and you slow down a little bit. What makes it a little bit tricky in World Superbikes is that we have a qualifying tyre, which genuinely you can only do one lap. After the second lap, you never improve on the second lap. There's a couple of tracks where they're not that abrasive and maybe you can do an okay second lap, but for example, in Estoril, there's no chance. It's at the end of the first lap, you're already struggling with the grip. So I came into turn one, and there was a Rabat. It was in the gravel, but it was just sort of rejoining the track, but a long way from the circuit. There's no marshals in the gravel, but there was still a yellow flag. So as the rules go, we lost the lap, which was a shame, because at that point, there's nothing you can do. You've got to commit to your lap. There was no danger on the side of the track. So you're not putting anybody in a dangerous position. And it was a little bit unfair, really, to go from what was a good qualifying in third place, which I was really happy with, to then being pushed back to the fourth row. And with the tight first few corners at Estoril, it makes it quite hard to really get a good start and make up a lot of ground. You need a little bit of good luck and good track position. So, yeah, that was a shame, because the weekend before that was really strong.
Yeah, and it's, as we record this, the general thinking is they're going to either give you guys two qualifying tyres to try and make up for what happened in a way, or scrap qualifying tyres altogether. What would you do?
For me, I've just got going well on the Kawasaki on qualifying tyres. It's something I didn't do that well last year. You have to ride the bike a little bit different. But I think for me, if it's a 15-minute session and you have to use the race tyre, at least then you've got the option. You're more like, because the way I look at it is the rule is there to protect the marshals, to protect the people that have crashed, and to protect the riders that are on the track. So that's the first priority. But if you're on a qualifying tyre, it doesn't actually, it doesn't help, because people aren't slowing down because they know they've only got one lap. So actually, the rule doesn't work if you look at it like that. But if you've got a race tyre and you've got the opportunity to do the next lap or the lap after, you can slow down, know that the lap's going to be cancelled anyway, look after the tyre a little bit and go again on the next lap. So I think that it allows, you've got no excuse then not to slow down, which is actually the reason why the rule has been brought in the last couple of years and this year in World Superbikes is to protect everybody. So I think if you just go on race tyres, there's no excuse for the riders not to slow down when they see an incident. On the qualifying tyre, even if it's one or two laps, you might have a yellow flag on both laps, the guys are going to be more inclined to keep pushing. So from the reason why they've installed the rule, I think just don't use a qualifying tyre. I think the same guys will be at the front and the results will be the same. So for me, that would be the more logical and best way to truly represent the rule.
Yeah, it just seems like the only problem here from that point of view is that Pirelli's also a championship sponsor, isn't it? So there's a commercial interest and they like setting lap records to be able to sell their products. It feels as though they're not going to scrap the qualifying tyres, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a different story. I don't agree with a Pirelli qualifying tyre lap times in cool conditions and trying to compare to MotoGP, because for me, that is certainly a battle that World Superbike's never going to win. And I just think it's completely, them stories are a complete waste of time, if you ask me. So for me, I think it'd be better to keep it separate. The amount of more grip you get from a Pirelli qualifying tyre, especially when it's cool, you're not doing them times in a race. So it's not a true reflection.
Yeah. And it doesn't need, World Superbikes doesn't need to be quicker than MotoGP anyway, does it, at the end of the day?
No, because we're not. We don't need to be. And it sort of frustrates me as a rider sometimes, and especially I know Jonathan in the winter, they like to push that. And but yeah, if Jonathan wants to be faster than MotoGP, he should have gone to MotoGP. There's a perfectly place in the bike world for a production world championship series, which has always been great, and there's a prototype world championship series that's doing great. So keep it separate, everybody's happy. There's no need to keep trying to draw the comparison, because like I said, World Superbike's not going to win that argument. We know the difference in the sport between the two championships. So I just think there's not much to be gained from it other than Pirelli, you know, announcing the lap time, which from a fan point of view, when the guys are on the edge of the track and the racing's close in the race, that's what we want. That's what riders want. That's what the fans want next to the track. If you're going half a second slow or you do one lap a second faster on a qualifying tyre, from the edge of the track, I don't believe as a fan, you can really see a massive difference. Obviously, you can see on the lap time at the end of the lap, but it's not bringing loads more to the fan on the edge of the track, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, I agree, actually. I think even if you said the lap times are going to be 10 seconds slower, but the racing is going to be amazing every single time, you'd go with that, wouldn't you? It doesn't really matter what the lap times are.
100%. Yeah, as a rider and a fan. So I think that's what we just need to bear in mind in all this, which is obviously the most important thing.
And what about Kawasaki and Jonathan? How are you getting on now? What's it like to be teammates with a six-time world champion and a record holder? It always feels from the outside that the team must go the way of the top guy who's won all these titles. Does it actually feel like that inside the team or not?
Not really. Johnny's Johnny. Him and his team, they do a great job in managing all the situation. He obviously rides the bike great. That's the first thing, which helps. But his team, they do a good job in managing the situations and putting themselves in a good position for the races on Sunday, and you can't argue with that. I think in Estoril, personally, Toprak and Scott were at a lot better pace than Johnny, but we come away from the weekend where Johnny's won two races and scored more points than them. So it's just what he does really well, and you have to give him respect for that. But from my feeling in Kawasaki, it's good. Another year's worth of experience on the bike. Last year was a strange year, as everybody knows. We didn't get all the testing, and we didn't get the proper all the tracks on the calendar to really understand the bike in different conditions, and I feel a lot more prepared from that side of it, working with the team, working with the guys, and the relationships always take a little bit of time when you know you're working with more of a when you're working with new people and foreign people, you need to understand exactly how they work. So yeah, I'm a lot more prepared this year, and it's showing in my riding, which is good.
And do you feel a lot more comfortable this year, Alex? Because as you said, you had all those hot temperatures last year and, you know, you didn't have a chance to do any testing. It was difficult, wasn't it? But Aragon this weekend, the first weekend, you felt so comfortable, it looked, from the outside, so under control.
Yeah, in this winter, I've done a lot of work. I was able to have a normal winter because it was a longer winter for World Superbike with the change in the calendar compared to previous years. We got to do plenty of testing, lots of race runs, and I just felt like I know what to expect from the bike now. I've run the bike, I know where the limit is, and I'm able to manage it a bit more, which in the race weekend, this is the important thing, because then you can adapt to the situation. Because that's all a race weekend is now, because we're Friday, 2 45-minute sessions or whatever they are on the Friday, and then you're racing Saturday. So all you need to be able to do is, the quicker you can adapt, and the quicker you can adapt to the temperature or the conditions or the bike on the track, between the rider and the team, the better results you're going to get. And that's why it's so important for me to have that, get that knowledge and have that comfort with the bike, which I now feel like I've got.
Is part of that as well doing what it seems like Jonathan and Per Ariba have always done so well, which is just at some point settling for a setup you're comfortable with. It might not be perfect, but we see a lot of people coming in, making changes, going back out again. There's not enough time to do that anymore, is there?
No, that's something I've always done anyway, like stay out and try to work on myself and do a lot of laps. If you see in the preps, I'll always be one of the guys that's doing the work on tyres and doing the long runs. And I think that as soon as you start doing short runs and looking for something from the bike, you can end up going in a vicious circle where you never find something that's any better than what you would have been on if you just learned to ride. You know where your limits are, whether it's on the front or the braking. If you learn to ride around them, I always feel like you're going to drag a better result out. So, yeah, like you said, that is something that Johnny and his guys do really well.
And is the bike feeling quite a lot different, Alex, this year? We know you've got a different fairing, quite a different riding position. And also, I get the impression that your bike this year is so much better in the turbulent, dirty air following other bikes with that new fairing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, you know what? I don't feel a massive difference with the fairing when I'm following the other bikes, really, but it holds the position a little bit better on the front in the faster corners with a little more downforce. The bike doesn't feel massively different because in the end, it's not massively different, to be honest. There's a few setup changes that I've had some new parts over the winter, a bit more personal for my style. We're a little bit different to Johnny, but that's just getting myself comfortable on the Kawasaki. In terms of the new bike and the modifications for 2021, wasn't loads of different things, but the few small changes we had have just been in the right direction for me. So that's obviously always nice when that happens. You don't need a massive change if the small steps are in the right direction.
And Estoril, when you finished 19th in that first race after the crash, I got the impression, was that just a bit of frustration maybe creeping in after what happened with the penalty?
No, obviously, my target in that race was to just have a good ride. I knew I had a decent pace. And I was trying to come through. It was only sort of 8 laps into the race. The front group was getting away, but my pace was similar at that point. And I was trying to just push to catch on the back of an Audi. And at that track with the long last corner, the slipstream on the straight, if you get within a second of the guys in front, you can really pull you on. So I was trying to do that. I made a mistake. The wind was quite light. It pushed me downhill turn 7. It's more downhill than it looks. I was a little bit slightly wide. Some little bumps there on the outside if you're on a little bit wide, and I just caught one of them bumps. So that was a shame because I felt quite good, like I said. And it was just my mistake. And it didn't put us on the back foot for Sunday, but obviously in the Super Four race, you still have to start from your qualifying position anyway from the day before. So that race was always going to be tough. But yeah, just a little, one type of frustration. I was just pushing a little bit hard to catch that front group because I believed that I had the pace to be there.
What do you make of the format now, Alex? Would you keep this format? I mean, it's good and it's bad, isn't it? In the sense that quad super pole does decide the grid for the first two. So if something goes wrong or you get a penalty, as you've just experienced, it can really mess up the weekend. James Whitten, for example, has suggested 3 sprint races, 3 12 lappers or something like that, and each one decides the grid for the next one. So it shakes up the grids a bit. What do you reckon?
Yeah, you know what? I'm always open to any sort of change. I think it's the sprint race is fun. It's 10 laps and in general, obviously, it's all a little bit closer. But, whenever they make a rule change or the grid change, some people don't like it, some people aren't. But I think it works okay. I think that it obviously puts, because we're qualifying for 2 races in the qualifying, it puts a big emphasis on doing a good job, because on the first couple of rows and get away at the start, it really makes a big difference. So, there's quite a lot of emphasis on the actual 15-minute qualifying session. But it's always been like that. You know, otherwise, there'd be no point having the qualifying. So it's nice to have a little bit of pressure there to do a good job. And yeah, I like the long races because I think it becomes a little bit more time management and stuff like that into it. But like I say, for the television side of it, for the fan side, the sprint races are always a little bit closer and a little bit more action. So if that's the way it goes, then I wouldn't mind either. So I'll ride anyway and whatever they tell me to do.
Yeah, I suppose it's just getting the best out of the circumstances you have, isn't it? In terms of tyres then, let's talk about that. Yeah. Because it was quite interesting at Estoril. We saw you and Jonathan and Luca Myers, who's also on a Kawasaki, using the SC0. Everybody else has started using the SCX tyre now, even in the long races. Why is it then that you guys can make the zero last, or does it suit the bike better? Or, you know, what is it? Why can that be used?
For me personally, I think the last race in Estoril was a mistake not to use the X. I think the reason why we use the X is use a zero, which is a harder tyre, is because we were fast enough to be competitive. Obviously, Johnny won the race, so how he rides, how he lifts the bike off the edge is quite good for that tyre. But the facts are, if you make the X last, you're going to be faster on the X. So last year, there were some races where it was completely opposite. I know Jerez, for example, I was the only rider on the X, and all the other guys was on the zero. So I think that because we felt quite good in the practices, the actual temperature for the second race was a lot hotter than we had all weekend. And for me, in that last race, I wasn't too comfortable with the bike. The difference to Johnny was a little bit more, and I had a lot of difficulties getting into the corner, especially on the edge of the tyres as I tried to put the bike down, coming from the rear. So I think it just went past the window a bit, but it's hard to say that when Johnny won the race and he's on the zero. So he managed it better, but I think that it's good that both tyres now are lasting quite well, and you can either use the X if you make it last, or you can use the zero and try and get some more performance out of the bike to give you a good lap time. So yeah, it was a strange one, because temperatures obviously affect the tyre life and the tyre performance quite a lot. And in Estoril, for that Sunday afternoon, the temperature jumped right up. So it's something you really have to be aware about.
Why is it, Alex, now that people can make the X last and they couldn't last year, is it just because they've had more time to test it, sort the setup out? Because last year we were hearing all the time, weren't we, from people like Redding, that it was only the lighter, smaller riders who could use that tyre.
Yeah, it sort of ruined his complaint, hadn't it? Because he wanted the X tyre banned at the start of the year.
He did, yeah.
The second race, he was with more grip than Johnny, and he's the one that made the mistake. So that complaint don't really work anymore, because he made it last and Johnny didn't believe he could. So I think it's purely down to set up rider management. Obviously, with Scott compared to, let's say, Alvaro Bautista, Scott's always going to struggle more for tyre life, which I understand where he's coming from in terms of his weight. It's something he obviously can't do much about. So there is an element of that. I don't believe it's something that is the reason why he's not beating Johnny, or I'm not beating Johnny, or they're beating me. It's a case of you've got to commit to your tyre, get your setup working for that tyre that you want to use. And I think both options are definitely viable. And some weekends they're not going to be, some weekends they are. And I guess that's quite nice. It's part of the challenge of the guys working with the team to get the most out of whichever option they decide to go down.
So that comes back to what we've said so many times before. Is it just that everyone else needs to do, in a way, what Johnny's been doing? Stay with the same team, stay with the same crew chief, and get some consistency going, like you are now doing, Scott's doing, Toprak's doing?
Yeah, it does help, because it's so close now in World Superbike. I know people always say that, but it is closer than it has been in the past. So it's there's a lot of good riders, a lot of good bikes. There's new manufacturers coming in that are pushing and starting to improve, but then they're showing how difficult it is as well. And I think with Johnny, they've just got somebody that understands the bike very well, rides it very well, doesn't make any mistakes, so he doesn't give many people much of an open door to capitalise. And just with the experience they've got in these short weekends, because by having a race on Saturday, the weekends are shorter, no matter what anyone says. I know last year, being on the bike for the first time, turning up at tracks for the first time with the bike, and having to race the next day after just a couple of sessions, it's hard then to go and try to beat Johnny, who's on the second lap, he's already on more or less like record pace. So it's, yeah, having that continuity does help a lot. So I think it's more down to him getting the most out of his package with a team that really understand it, which makes him hard to beat.
The final question, Alex, is it fair to say that, in a way, some of these rules that have been brought in to close up the championship and almost make it more difficult for Jonathan, the man who's been dominating, have they actually almost made it easier for him, racing so soon and having a sprint race where you can pull away easier, stuff like that?
You know what? It's never easy, is it? Never easy. It's never easy to win a race. Never easy to win another race. Never easy to win a championship. It's even harder to win another championship. So if you won 6 years in a row, you sort of get the impression that you can't really sit here and moan about the the weekend schedule, the rules, when he jumped on the car, it's like maybe it was more competitive bike than better than the other bike. I don't think that's fully the case now. I think we showed you about Bautista how he can manage when he can't win. So I think that it's more a case of he does everything really well, and it's a case of us, the riders, me, Scott and Torat and the guys, is to improve ourselves, improve our riding and beat him. I've took that approach a lot this winter. I can see what he's doing. I can see where I'm doing it better than him. I can accept that he's doing a really good job, and I'm getting closer and closer to him all the time. And I am. That's a lot of sessions, all the sessions. I'm not too far behind. I'm starting to push him now. I can ride in all conditions on the bike, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be a really good year. I think it's down to us to improve. You can't blame anything else. He's just doing a good job, and you have to respect that.
But Alex, you've always been really, really honest, and that's what we love about it. Keep pushing, and let's see what Misano brings. Decent track for you, isn't it, Misano?
Yeah, I can't wait. Honestly, I can't wait for these next three rounds. We've got Misano, Donington, Aston. Great tracks. Estoril was a tough one for me, and I still felt like without that penalty, I'd have been really competitive. And yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to Italy next week and getting involved. It's going to be great. Can't wait.
Good luck with that, Alex, and we'll be looking out for you.
Thanks, mate. Take it easy, and we'll speak soon.
Thanks a lot. Great to hear Alex Lowe's there sounding as motivated and as honest as ever. Former BSB champion as well, of course. So we move on now to a new, quick, but entertaining, I hope, feature for the Full Throttle podcast, Magic Moments. And here's one from our colleague and fellow Eurosport commentator, Barry Nutley.
My little anecdote goes back pre-Eurosport days, to days of the BBC, in fact, working for Grandstand. And alongside the one and only Murray Walker, who we lost, sadly, so very recently. In those days, the BBC was across all types of motorcycle sport. Trials, motocross, grass track racing, road racing. They did a bit of everything where they could dip in and out. And I was lucky enough to be involved in that. And I was down in Kent at a boarded oval circuit at Collier's Wood or Collier Street. Collier Street, I think. And those who follow grass track racing will remember that. Murray Walker was alongside me as lead commentator, obviously, going for it in the solo final. It started to rain, and it rained heavily. And the floor manager, sadly I can't remember his name, rushed outside, got some bin liners, and pinned them all up across the ceiling of this wooden shed, which is what it was. That was a commentary box. Such was the luxury of BBC Grandstand. About a minute into the race, the bin liners were full, and the one over Murray was a particularly big one. It filled up with water, the drawing pins let go, and it emptied its contents all over Murray Walker, who irrepressibly just kept on going as though nothing was happening at all. Such is the mark of the man.
Well, that was a Murray Walker moment I've actually not heard before, and I've heard most of them. So thank you very much for that particularly amusing anecdote there about the late, great, legendary Murray Walker. Thank you very much for that one, Bazza, our fellow commentator at Eurosport. And we'll be hearing soon, of course, from Barry live on air as we get together for the British sidecar commentary, the first one of which is at the first meeting of the year for British Superbikes at Alton Park at the end of this month. Okay, let's move on to our next World Superbike rider now, Eugene Laverty, to discuss the latest from the BMW point of view. Well, Eugene, as we all confidently predicted, the BMW has been a real pleasant surprise for everybody at the start of this season.
Yeah, so far so good, I have to say. I had a delayed start with things, but the moment I rode the M1000RR for the first time really was round one. On the Friday, I thought, oh, this is a good step forward. So I had tested essentially last year's bike, you would say, almost with wings a couple of weeks previous. So yeah, it was nice then to hop on this year's bike and see firsthand the big step forward that it made at BMW Motorrad. So I'm very pleased with the progress, because the first two rounds were the two toughest tracks in the calendar for us, and we've been there or thereabouts.
Yes, it was a good early birthday present for last week, by the way. So happy 35th to you. And we should also say happy 40th to Michael Laverty for today when this podcast goes out. 40 on Monday. So life begins at 40, doesn't it?
Well, that's what they say. I've got 5 years left of trying to kid myself. I'm still a kid for a while yet.
Yeah.
But Michael and I are both Gemini. And Yeah, I had a nice little birthday. I went out in Euro riding and then the afternoon I had some beers. So ideal, really.
Just before we get properly into the interview, we should also say congratulations to your wife, Pippa, who's now a member of the FIM. That's nice, isn't it, to see a new member of the FIM and a new responsibility. That's going to keep her very busy, I would think.
It is great. She's been working hard behind the scenes on things, so it's nice to see her being rewarded for her efforts. And I think she'll be great in that role. I always joke that I'm Pippa's plus one when we go to events because I'm better with the visor down, just riding my motorbike, whereas everybody knows Pippa. When we lived in Monaco, she was a sociable one, but everybody together. So I think she'll be great for women in motorsport in her role. You know, that's what they need. I think people like Pippa can bring them together, and they are still a minority in our sport. So bringing riders to the fore, mechanics, crew chiefs, even telemetrists and such, we're seeing it more and more in recent years. So looking forward to seeing how things develop in the coming years.
Yeah, for anybody who doesn't know Pippa, by the way, listening to this, she's certainly very organised. It's Pippa who sends out all of Eugene's media information and all that sort of thing. So it must be nice for you, in a way, to have someone dealing with all that at the circuit who's so close to you and just allow you to focus on your job.
It is great. I don't like to take my focus away from the racing too much because it is a short weekend and you really need to focus 100% on it. I always see when there are some other riders, especially younger riders, tossing around wheelie in their scooter and whatnot. I think, how have you got the time to do that? Because we're not riding. We have to be working with the engineers and how to make the bike better. So on that side of things, Pippa takes care of all the social media and make sure everybody's up to date because otherwise, I would forget.
Yeah, so busy times for the Laverty family. So again, happy birthday to you, Eugene, for last week, 35. Happy birthday to Michael today, 40. And congratulations to Pippa on the new FIM role. Watch out for Pippa Laverty in the white FIM shirt in a paddock near you. But going right back, Eugene, to your tenure with RC Squadra Corsa, which of course is the team that used to run the MV Augustas of Leon Camier and Jordi Torres and the Supersport bikes as well. I have to say, I genuinely thought you weren't going to make the grid this year at one point because it seemed like from the headlines we were reading in the German press, the team didn't have any money, there's no funding, they won't be on the grid, poor Eugene's out of a ride again. So you must have been relieved that you were even on the grid at Aragon.
Well, to line up for the first round was always the priority. We missed the first few tests and it was worrying because there was some delays with material. But I was confident it was going to go ahead because I had seen photos of a lot of the equipment and everything being produced. So we were fortunate that the season was later than usual because obviously the first round would usually be down under in February and that would have been quite early for us being a new team. There's a lot to be put in place. So we're still, I'd say Misano is where my season starts. These first two rounds were like pre-season testing, so it was just an added bonus that we were actually relatively strong. But I'm going to this third round really excited to start my season proper.
Now, I guess part of that is to do with the brakes, is it? As far as I'm aware, you've been on Nissan brakes like the other BMWs, but an older spec of those Nissans, and now you're going to be on the Brembo brakes, which are, I don't know whether it's fair to say they're better, but there's certainly more people using them in the paddock, aren't there? So is that the big reason it should get much better this weekend, or is there something else?
Well, it will be my 2021 bike. In the full capacity, really, because there was lots and ends that weren't quite ready for the first round. So this will be me on my bike properly as it is to be, and I'm excited. You know, we've done a great job in the limited time we've had. My crew chief Paolo Piazza has been fantastic. He's very old school, and we have just been going off of my feelings and my feedback because we're still waiting on a lot of stuff in terms of chassis programs and whatnot. So it's been great just actually to take it back that way. And sometimes in our sport, we often nowadays get a little bit too much fixated on the computer. And last year, I felt there was a lot of times that I would want a certain direction, but the computer would say no. And I didn't like that. Whereas now, Paolo's taking it old school and some of the setting changes we've made that have worked. And I know with the other BMW guys have followed. I think sometimes the riders, feedback is the most important thing because we are not car drivers. At the end of the day, the car driver is a fixed mass in the car that cannot be moved. So the computer really is definitive. But for us, the rider moves around a lot and that changes the weight balance of the bike. So these lines in the computer screen, they don't tell the full story. I think I know one great story from an old rider in the paddock that's now working with one of the factory teams as team manager. He always would refer to the computer and say, show me, where's the line for the feeling? You know, show me on that computer, where's the rider's feeling? Because it's not there. And so that's what you always have to remember.
Yeah, I think a lot of engineers seem to be guilty of not remembering there is a human being on that bike, as you just said, aren't there? With feelings as well. It's not just feeling for the bike, but emotions.
Well, that's not just for the riders, but I think all across the board. I always say this, in racing, you have to remember that it's, while there is business, it's also part sport. And with sports, there comes a lot more to it, emotions, the danger, everything else. This isn't just business, so you have to take on the human aspect. And yeah, I've seen over the years that a lot of people forget that.
Yeah, well, it's nice you've got an old school crew chief then for that reason. And what about BMW itself, Eugene? How good is this bike now? We know we've got the BMW M on a bike for the first time, many cars, but first time we've seen the legendary M letter on a bike. But just how serious are BMW? Because the cynics say, oh, it's BMW. It's the same thing as always. A lot of talk and not much actual performance. But you almost get the feeling this year, if any, it feels a bit different. It does feel as though this project's going somewhere.
Definitely. BMW Motorrad, they've committed to this project and really want to see us up there at the sharp end. That's why they've doubled the number of riders in the grid. And we've already begun to reap the rewards of that. So I'm very happy with the work they've done. And I wasn't there in year one, but it was clear that the step wasn't made forward. Year two, but definitely for year three of the project, it's made a huge step forward. And yeah, big thanks as well to Marcus Eschenbacher. He came on board together with me as my crew chief, and he's now stayed on with Mickey Vandermark as his crew chief, but he's done a lot of work to help move the project forward as well. So I have a lot of trust in his ability. But now this bike is plenty capable. Now it's just a matter of getting the circuits that is going to suit us a little bit more. Still, our weak point is trying to stop the bike. You know, that's is not just going to disappear overnight. We still have to improve that. And Estoril had 4 to 5 first gear corners, so that was tough for us. So I'm looking forward to Misano, a lot of the track, fast flowing corners. So see what we can manage there.
And is stopping the bike not going to be even more of a problem, Norge, as we get into the European summer? You know, places like Assen, Most in the Czech Republic, Navarra in August, that is going to be hot, isn't it? And that surely is going to be even more of an issue then.
No, honestly, it's a real slow first gear corners where you really have to stop the bike and do a 180. That does hurt us. So
right.
I'm looking forward to something like Assen. Assen's very fluid. Okay, we've got few little tight corners here and there, but the majority of the track has a flowing nature. So yeah, I'd love to go to Phillip Island again this year, but that's unfortunately yeah. Not on the cards because something like that is built for it. But I'm enjoying working on improving the weak aspects of the bike, and that's why I enjoy being part of a project like this, because you have to prioritize and that's the only way to develop, to move things forward. And that's my priority right now. I just keep working on those weak points. But now BMW have been fantastic with us, and it's clear that there is 4 riders involved in the project now. It's not just the factory team and that we're there on the side. We are involved and we're on the same equipment. So let's see who can be the first BMW rider to get up there in the podium. I think we're all 4 strong riders that have all won world championship level. So I think we're in a good place.
Well, to be fair, I think people do forget that, don't they? They forget you were the championship runner-up to Tom Sykes and were challenging for the title until the last round, and the fact you've won 13 races and 4 poles, 35 podiums. It's so easy to forget that some of the riders who appear to be in the midfield at the moment or the bottom half of the top 10, you know, you are all race winners and multiple race winners in some cases. The level of the championship has very much gone up, hasn't it, in the last 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, the rider level is an all-time high. I want to look at somebody like Johnny Ray to aim at. Johnny's record speaks for itself. And there's a lot of young riders coming through, the likes of Toprak and Garrett Gerloff. You know, I have a lot of admiration for the way those guys ride. So I enjoy riding against a strong lineup like that, because you really want to be challenged, don't you? So you want to look at these guys and think, well, you know, he's riding pretty impressive, because then the day you beat him, then you know, well, I rode pretty impressive there too.
It must have been good though for you, Eugene, at Estoril a couple of weekends ago. You know, you were actually up there racing with Jonathan Rea at one point and people like that, and it had been a while for you, and you know, since you were last able to do that.
It has been. That's, you know, the downside of our sport, as I always say, motorsport, that the rider is only part of the equation. If the bike, machinery, team, everything is up to scratch, then you're not going to be there. But you have to keep your head down and keep working towards it in the hope that all the pieces of the puzzle come together. And I feel like this is the first time in a few years where I've had a package underneath me where I can look again towards the podium. So I'm excited for what lies ahead. Just gotta keep plugging away and not get ahead of myself. But, you know, whenever I started, I qualified in Super Pole 8th position, and then this daft rule that's in at the moment with the yellow flag, losing us 5 positions in the grid because somebody ran off track and had a yellow flag. So I ended up starting from 13th position, but then found myself on lap 1, I think already in 8th position. And to me, that's a big sign that the bike's a lot better, because last year I wasn't able to maneuver the bike around people. The bike wasn't agile. I didn't feel safe to ride around other guys because they could put their bikes in places where I couldn't even imagine. They could stop it on the spot. Whereas in all 3 races, I made progress in the first lap, and that shows confidence that I'm able to do what I need with the bike.
Yeah, so it is that word, confidence, again, isn't it? It does feel as though you've got confidence now to actually do what you want to be able to do with the bike. And as you said, it's still not even what we've seen so far. Hasn't been your proper bike for this year. So, I mean, when was the last time you actually remember feeling this confident with your motorcycle?
That's it. At the start of 2019, just at Oregon, mainly, unfortunately, it was only really one ride, and before then I got injured, and the rest of the season was a bit rubbish after that. But yeah,
That was the Go 11 Ducati, wasn't it then?
Yeah, we were strong right then. I thought, well, this is a package that I could do something with. But yeah, you know, racing can be it's a cruel sport at times, but. Well, it has been some years since really I was there week in, week out, and it's too long. It's too many years, so I don't like to make excuses. I wasn't strong enough those years, whereas I think now I'm riding better than I ever have done, and I'm going to try and make the most of this opportunity that I have, because last year, because the bike wasn't quite there, I'm not a rider that can, you know, go on above and beyond with the bike. And you know, Tom is very good at that, as we can see in Super Pole especially. Tom can drag a bike around. He's got incredible talent to do that. But for me, I knew that I needed to have continuity in order to move forward. I've always been better in the second year in the bike, so I'm thankful that BMW Motorrad gave me that chance to show what I can do. And I think they've been pleasantly surprised already to see just how much of a step forward I've made. But that's the kind of rider I am, and that's why I'm always pushing to try and get these 2-year contracts fixed in. I think manufacturers and team bosses at the time think that, oh, a rider just wants that for the paycheck or just to feel secure and then, you know, rest on their laurels. But that's not the case for me. I've always been stronger in my second year, be it with Parco Dar Honda in my second year. I won 9 out of the 13 races. First year of the Aprilia 2012, I finished like 6th in the championship, and then the next year fought for the title. And that's the reason whenever I went to MotoGP, I signed a 2-year contract. Fortunately, I changed the team changed manufacturer between those years, so I didn't really have that continuity as such. But I always want a second year to give myself a chance to move forward. I'm not somebody that can just arrive and be at home on a bike first time out.
Yeah, I can see completely what you mean, because if that is in the back of your mind, it's just an added pressure for everybody else and surely another distraction, isn't it? Whereas if you've got a 2-year deal, you can just forget about that and focus on the job in hand.
Yeah, and do the real work that needs done rather than, you know, just trying to run as fast as you can to the next post. That was my mentality last year, was that it was a 2-year deal. And yeah, unfortunately, some of the decisions that were made, we found ourselves in a place where me and my teammate were put against each other, and we ended up not moving the project forward because we were just fighting for a job. And that shows that that's not the way to go forward. You have to think about the long game. And yeah, that's how racing is. It's hard to, everybody's different. You know, there are some riders that can do that, but I'm certainly not one of them. I think I need to feel comfortable with my bike, and I definitely am.
What do you think that was based on in the end, Eugene? Because that was the famous story, or the infamous story, of you and Tom finding out about Michael van der Maart being signed, wasn't it? And you were at an event with BMW in Germany and sort of read it on Twitter and, you know, with the press release going out just as everybody else did. Do you feel they just kept Tom because he is a world champion, or because he'd simply had another year with the team, so they kept him for that reason?
Well, the results spoke for themselves. Tom was beat me last year. That's what it comes down to. You know, you can't ignore that. And that's why I said to Tom, well done on the seat. You know, you've been faster than me, so you deserve it. But yeah, the main thing for me was then to get the, well, what is the third seat? You know, be it in a satellite team, but having the same package underneath me so that I can move forward. And yeah, it wasn't an easy year last year, because the bike wasn't easy to ride in the beginning, but I knuckled down with the guys and really made steps forward with the bike. First, to make it rideable, you know, that was the key thing. But by that stage, I had lost my job before we were even able to make the thing rideable. So we almost had to step backwards to go forwards. But we're seeing now that the bike is much more rider friendly.
It is interesting. I'm not saying too many cooks spoil the broth in some of these factory teams, but it does seem quite intriguing looking at you with your team and Chas Davis with a private team. It does seem sometimes as though having a smaller knit team like that with a good crew chief and a good rider and a good bike, it's actually being proven that it can work quite successfully.
Well, I think we're seeing in World Superbike right now, we're in a great place. MotoGP did it first, where you started to see the satellite teams like Pramac up there with the official factory team. You think, well, hang on, you know, the team is capable, the rider is capable. Before, in the past, we always thought the pecking order, and we were so used to it that only factory teams were winning. And in MotoGP, that was quite boring for years, because if you weren't on one of those seats, you weren't going to win. And like Formula One, that's where Formula One is right now, whereas MotoGP changed that. And, you know, we see these satellite teams able to fight for titles. And World Superbikes had it that way now too. I think really it was when Toprac won in the Kawasaki a couple of years ago that started the ball rolling. And now we see Gerloff last year on Yamaha as well, and Michael Rinaldi winning on the Go 11 bike. So, yeah, I think Scott Smart doesn't get enough credit for what he's done for a championship on a technical level. You know, they've changed the regulations a little bit to allow satellite teams and everybody else to have the same equipment. So I think we're in a great place, and there is a great lineup of riders, definitely, but the key thing is the priority and machinery.
Yes, and for anyone listening who's not aware of that, that's a rule that came in a few years back now, stating that all of the smaller customer teams are obliged to be able to, or sorry, the reference teams, the factory teams, are obliged to have enough parts available for all of the smaller teams to buy before running it on their bike. Now, whether the smaller teams have enough budget to buy them is another matter. But as you say, Eugene, it's working, isn't it? And we've got a brilliant mix now of people fighting for podiums and top fives and hopefully even wins as the season goes on. Just quickly then, before we sign off, just a quick couple of quick fire questions about the BMW, and then we will go back to that yellow flag thing, because it's interesting to get your opinion on that, having just heard from Alex as well. 2019, we remember Tom and Reiterberger at the time were basically running with a stock engine, weren't they? Because the reliability, as soon as they souped it up, as it were, it was blowing engines up, and Peter Hickman ran a stock bike at the TT. Is the new engine much, much better now this year and more reliable as well?
Well, I think the big step forward has been the engine, honestly. And I've learned a lot about just how much the engine can affect the bike. Everybody thinks about the engine as in the speed traps and even just corner exits. You know, we all know that if the engine is linear, how it can make the bike spin and cause other issues. But yeah, this engine has been a big step forward, just to give me that natural feeling of the bike, how the bike transfers, how the bike stops as well. So, you know, when that was a fundamental that wasn't really correct for racing last year. And yeah, the big step forward for me has been that engine, that whenever you adjust your gas position, that the bike reacts accordingly. And yeah, I'm 35, but I'm still learning about how a motorbike works.
And I think, did I hear you say in one interview in Estoril that engine braking is much better now? And is that just engine? Is it the shift cam system, or is that electronics, or is it a combination of all these things?
It is the engine itself. There's been some changes with it. Like I say, I got like Marcus Eschenbacher, could tell you a lot more about it than I could, but he's got a great understanding for what the rider needs fitting wise. And yeah, the first time I had the engine in properly in round one, I thought, okay, now this is more correct. So I think there's been some other changes, like the swing arm has been a good benefit as well. Some other little bits in the chassis here and there. The winglets, sure to help wheelie, but if the engine isn't correct, then it's such a big piece of the puzzle, isn't it? So yeah, finally, for me, it's right this year. And that's why I feel that we're going to move forward from here. Last year, it didn't matter what you did. If you didn't have the natural feeling of the bike, you didn't have that confidence, whereas now I do.
I think Sean Muir even said, certainly with the factory team, they've even got a new supplier of wheels this year. Have you got those new wheels as well? And does that make much difference?
I think that's the two things we're using different is wheels and brakes.
Right,
so I'm
right.
Not sure how they differ exactly. But yeah, there's been search in every little area to try and improve here and there, like I say, because you have to. You see the other manufacturers, they never stand still. But you guys at BMW, the delayed testing more than the other manufacturers, and it did pay off because when they came out swinging.
One more quick thing about the bike, Yuji, and then we'll discuss this yellow flag situation. You have a different ECU as well, don't you? I remember when Ten Carter and Honda Motor Europe used to run the Honda. They had a different ECU with a Cosworth ECU at the time. Now, most of the paddock, if not all the paddock, is Magneti Marelli. Although you guys have a Bosch system, don't you, with BMW's own software. What are the advantages of that?
Well, it's they've always ran on the bike is the Bosch system. And I'd say at the beginning of last year, that was where we made the biggest strides forward. Sander Donkers was a key part of that. He'd come across from MotoGP as well, and we made huge strides forward. I was really impressed with how he simplified things and the functionality of it. He understood how to adjust things so that we could change it during the session, because that's the key, isn't it? When a rider comes in, you need to be able to change things quickly. So yeah, every package is different, but now this Bosch system is working very well for us.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. Then it is great to see such a mix of different manufacturers. You can tell BMW is making progress, Honda's coming as well, which I think is great to mix it up with Kawasaki, Yamaha, and of course the Ducati. Okay, so the yellow flag thing, just before we sign off, Eugene, we just heard from Alex, his opinion, saying that he would just take out qualifying tyres altogether and remove that variable. As we record this, it sounds like it's either going to be no qualifying tyres, or I think more likely, two qualifying tyres for each rider from this weekend onwards. What do you make of that suggestion, and what do you make of what actually happened at Estoril last Saturday?
Well, what happened we knew was going to occur. That's something that we all discussed whenever this rule was brought in, because in our championship, we have a one-lap tyre for qualifying, so you can't possibly have a rule that the yellow flag is out, that the rider loses that lap because it's your only lap. And the next lap, maybe a second slower, and Alex, I think he was penalised more than most of us in the front row back to like 10th position.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we knew this was going to happen, and in my opinion, it should have been adjusted before it became a problem. We waited too long, and it happened already at round two. But the important thing is it is going to be changed, from what I understand. I like the idea of two qualifying tyres. I think from a rider perspective, I would prefer that they don't have the qualifier and tyre just to get rid of it. But I understand there's the need for the show and the entertainment. We are there to be entertainers after all. So I think the idea of two qualifying tyres is a great suggestion, so we could see even faster lap times. The main thing is that, okay, you're probably going to go faster in your second qualifier, but even if you do come across the yellow flag then, at least you have the backup of the first lap that you did on the other qualifier that should be within a few tenths of a second. So I think that's a good suggestion, and pleases everybody.
It just proves how important it is to get a good banker lap in initially as well, doesn't it? But will this be surely top of the agenda when the Rider Safety Commission meeting happens at Misano on Thursday?
Well, I would hope that it will already be in place by then. The Riders Safety Committee meeting happens on Friday evening. So I hope that this is something I'm hoping to hear from soon, because we can't go into Saturday with this rule still hanging over our heads, because otherwise you could end up seeing riders going out right away with the qualifying tyre. But yeah, who's to say if you do go out right away with your qualifying tyre, then you may still end up with an issue. But I think we do need to change this as soon as possible.
Just one more question for me, Eugene, which you may or may not be able to answer, but I've got to have to ask it because I'm wondering, why did they bring the rule in the first place? Is it simply because they do it like this in MotoGP, so we have to do it the same? Or did they just oversee the fact that we're on qualifying tyres and didn't think about it? You know, did the riders speak out about this before it was introduced?
Yeah, from what I understand, it is that they want the rules to be the same all across the board, which does make sense.
Yeah.
And every FIM championship to have the same rules, because otherwise it is confusing, isn't it? Like we saw in Suzuka a few years ago with the rule having been changed about the crashing after the red flag, whatever it was.
Yeah.
A lot of the confusion. So we do need to have the same rules across the championship, but it was something that was overlooked, I believe, because of us having the qualifying tyre. So yeah, the moment the riders were informed about it on the Thursday of Aragon in the riders' briefing, we all kicked up a fuss, and we were all everybody was putting their hand up and saying, "Oh, this isn't going to work. We need to sort this out right now." And unfortunately, it wasn't.
And I suppose, as Alex said before as well, it's also because it wasn't like there was a rider down being assisted by the marshals. Tito Rabat was off the track and about to rejoin the track and completely out of harm's way, wasn't he?
Yeah, and that's it. I didn't even see the yellow flag, I have to be honest. I'm usually looking out for them, but I didn't even bother chasing it up. I just thought, hey, I'll just leave it there, because it may have been a case that the yellow flag just came out after I had passed it. But let's say, if you had a still shot and showed the yellow flag beside me, that's maybe enough to be incriminating. But for me, I don't think the yellow flag was ever out directly in front of me. So it is a bit daft. But the point that I raised, and I was honest about it, because I think often riders aren't honest enough in fear that they're going to be called out on it. I said, I've got one lap tire here and I see yellow flag. I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to slow down. Okay, if I see something that looks like it is serious, that's going to be different. But you see a yellow flag, you have to keep it pinned, otherwise you're not a racer anymore. And like the old Ayrton Senna phrase, the moment you no longer go for a gap, you're no longer a racer. And I think that's the same. And for me, if this rule was brought in for safety, and the fact is that we see it in MotoGP as well, that none of us are slowing down for it, because when you're on a lap, you have to keep going. Unfortunately, ideally, maybe people are going to look at that and think, oh, that's irresponsible, but we are racers and we're on that one lap. We have to keep it going, because that is our job. So for me, as a safety aspect, it's not working, because all we're seeing is it ruining the show. So you get Pecco Bagnaia taking pole at Portugal and then losing his lap just because he passed through a yellow flag, but he didn't slow down and he's not going to, because he's a racer. So it's not serving any purpose, in my opinion.
One final question, Eugene, which has just occurred to me. You've now been a World Superbike rider. Well, it's 10 years since you were first a World Superbike rider. You haven't been one for 10 years because you went off to MotoGP, of course, for a couple and came back again. But, it's 10 years since you've been a World Superbike rider, 13 or so now since you've been in this paddock with World Supersport. I'm just keen to know, how's the atmosphere now amongst the riders in general in the commission meetings and things like that? Is there a good rapport, or is there quite a lot of tension and needle between certain people? What's it like at the moment?
I think there is a good rapport there. There always is, to be honest.
That's good.
In Superbike, whenever I first went there, there was the old guard, the likes of Carlos Checa, that we had a lot of respect for, and then the young kids as we were coming through. And now we're the old guard, and there's some younger guys coming through. So we're all racers, and we've got respect for each other. There's always the odd one that you're not going to pull with, but I think that's the same. Even if you're working in an office job, it doesn't mean you have to go and hang out with the guy.
That's
and have a
so true. Yeah.
But the main thing is to have the respect. I think the only one I can think of right now is with Garrett Gerloff. I think he needs to rein in a little bit, and that's, again, something that I pointed out after Magny Cor. This is my concern. I really like the guy, and as a racer, I think he's fantastic. I really like the way he rides. But the worrying thing for me in Magny Cor was that whenever he took Tom and I out, and whenever he came to see me in the paddock, I was waiting for the apology, but he didn't. He came to tell me how he hadn't done anything wrong, and that was worrying for me. Not because I was the one on an apology, but the worrying point was, this guy hasn't learned his lesson. And when a guy doesn't realize he's done wrong, what happens? They make the same mistake again. And we've seen it twice now. And yeah, that's something that I want to see addressed, is that, a guy needs to be reprimanded for his actions. Otherwise, you don't learn.
Yeah, well, sure enough, for anybody listening who doesn't know, Garrett Gerloff has been given a pit lane start, actually, for the first race at Misano on Saturday as a result of the latest clash, which was with Michael Rinaldi. But yeah, I think I agree with you, Eugene. It's oh, did you not know either? Sorry, I thought you would know that.
No, I didn't realize that, but that's good to hear. That's just what it needs, just as a little, so it's in the back of the rider's head. So,
yeah,
you know, Garrett's smart enough. I think from now on, I think he'll cool his jets a little bit.
Yeah, obviously, as we stressed in the commentary, actually, with James Whittam last weekend, he's not doing it on purpose, is he? But I suppose you just need a warning, don't you, to, you know, to have some sort of penalty like this before you end up hurting yourself or somebody else or both.
Yeah, and it's about accountability. I think you've got to remember that Garrett's still a young guy, isn't he? Mid-20s.
Yeah.
So yeah. I remember, you know, as I get older, you become less of a dickhead, don't you?
And hopefully, touch wood, yeah.
Yeah, whenever you're younger, you don't really take accountability for your actions sometimes, and that's clearly the stage in his life that he's at right now, because it was frustrating to listen to in an interview after the crash at Estoril where he said that the data confirmed that he hadn't done anything wrong. I thought, again, that's data on a computer screen, that's lines. The only data that you should be looking at is the guy that you rammed from behind. That's the data that counts, and you did do something wrong. So it's about accountability, and I think being punished for your actions is the only way to really take heed and calm down.
Yeah, I remember Unai Aradre saying that in Barcelona last year when he wiped Tom Booth Amos out of the Supersport 300 race lead with a few corners to go, and saying, well, I can break much later than you, but I guess the problem is if he's in front of you, you sort of need to factor that into the equation, don't you, really?
Exactly. That's just it. It's not about the guy being in your way. He's there. Yeah. You know, you got to realize you can't ram them, because that's how crashes happen.
It's a bit like on the road, actually, isn't it? Where the person behind is always the one who gets the blame for the accident, even if someone stalled at the lights or whatever. If you run into someone else, you're the one who's in trouble.
Yeah, that's life.
Yeah. Well, Eugene, thanks very much for all of that. Good luck this weekend. It sounds like there's more to come with the BMW, and I think it's going to be a good weekend of racing and quite close, maybe. Three different winners, do you reckon? Could it happen this weekend?
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? That's what Superbike Great needs right now, because Johnny's so tough to beat. He's a machine right now. So I'm focusing my job, trying to get in that top six. And I don't know if we're quite ready for the podium yet, but I'll be giving it my all.
Yeah, I'd be absolutely delighted if you are, and good luck with it, and we'll be watching out for you. Thanks, Eugene.
Cheers, Greg.
So many thanks to Eugene Laverty and earlier to Alex Lowes as well. This has been the Full Throttle Podcast. We will be back next week, Monday the 14th of June. James Whittam and I will be in the commentary box recording that one after coming off air for Misano World Superbikes. Races 7, 8 and 9. It's round 3 of the season, and we will be bringing live coverage in your direction, starting with Friday Free Practice 1 from 9:25 a.m. UK time, live on Eurosport 2 and the Eurosport app. That's this Friday, the 11th of June, 9:25 a.m. But from Full Throttle, that's all for this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. Greg Haynes with you. We'll be back then live on air with Misano Free Practice 9:25 on Friday morning. We'll see you then.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.